Music from Dennis Jernigan along with The Watermark and their song, I Bless You. And it's about 10 minutes after the hour. It's Monday and Memorial Day. So we're celebrating a holiday. And Dr. Don Clark, part of that holiday celebration. Don coming to us from Garden Valley, Texas. Don is a biochemist and board member at creationmoments.com. Don, it's nice of you to spend part of your holiday with us. Good morning.
Oh, well, good morning. It's nice being with you again this week and this morning.
And I'm hoping, I'm trying to give David a chance to talk, because he's miffed when I don't let him talk. I just want to give him a little space to get a word in edwise here. David, good morning to you, David.
Good morning to me.
Okay, that's enough. And the topic this morning, we've kind of broached this topic before. Raw milk. In fact, I've been with Heike last week. We were talking about some of the benefits of raw milk, and you told us about what homogenized milk, which has been around for my whole life at least. I'm not sure when that started, 30s or 40s or something, may prove to actually get more fat into your system than raw milk would, just because of the way the fat and the milk is mixed. Remember that discussion, Don?
Yes, that wasn't. I don't know if it was last week or the week before. Well,
it could have been 2 weeks. Could have been 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was probably 2 weeks ago. The problem with the homogenized milk is that the particles of fat in the homogenization process and what that is, they pass the milk through very tiny holes, so that you have small fat particles that then stay suspended in the milk, and so it looks, you know, more pleasant than having your milk separate in the refrigerator or on the store shelf. But the problem with that is that those little tiny fat particles can pass into your intestinal system, and they carry along with them a fat-soluble enzyme called xanthine oxidase, which, along with other things, can start to put little pits in the inside of your blood vessels.
So that would be classified as an inflammatory then?
An inflammatory response, right.
Oh, response, okay. Why do they homogenize milk? Is it just so you won't get the cream to the top like you used to?
Yeah, it's just for appearance.
Just appearance, okay. So it wasn't to control fat. Yeah, okay. Okay.
The pasteurization is, in quote, for a health issue, because not all dairy farmers were as clean and careful as they needed to be. And so sometimes the milk would get contaminated, and then to kind of suppress or reduce the number of bacteria in the milk, they went through a pasteurization process.
And that's cooking it, isn't it?
It's,
in effect,
it's going through several cycles of heating and then cooling, heating and cooling, heating and cooling, with the hope of killing, you know, a certain amount of bacteria. Mm-hmm. It was actually Louis Pasteur who came up with the process.
Yeah, I was going to say, was his work done specifically with milk in mind, or was it simply about sterilizing and getting rid of bacteria generally?
Yes, it was proving, it was disproving spontaneous biogenesis.
Uh-huh.
So, which was an evolutionary theory, by the way. It was disproving that. And so he went through a pasteurization process of his tissue culture, or his culture medium. And then he designed a kind of a contorted path with a glass tube, and put that on top of his flask. So that way, you know, bacteria couldn't fall from the air into the into his medium and then start growing spontaneously.
Now, this is interesting that you said that that's an evolution, a component of at least the early evolutionist thinking, is that spontaneous biogenesis, meaning life just springs from nothing. I guess they would see that as justification for the theory, wouldn't they? I don't want to get us off raw milk, but that's intriguing to me.
Yeah, no, that's it is interesting that you know, a lot of these, you know, experiments that early experiments that were done, people thought, well, you know, if I have, you know, some meat lying in the counter, on the counter, obviously things grow on it spontaneously. I haven't done anything to it. But what they didn't take into account, which Pasteur did, it was, oh, maybe there's some tiny stuff floating around that it didn't spontaneously get there. The product was contaminated in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what his experiment was all about, was to disprove, spontaneous generation type of thing, mm-hmm. spontaneous biogeneration.
But it turned out, we'll just fill in the blanks here, like the evolutionist, you'll just fill in the blanks. Apparently, France was the land of dirty cows because they were having a problem with sickness from milk. And so they took Pasteur's process and said, let's try this and see if it fixes it. And lo and behold, it did.
Right. And it reduces the number of bacteria and microorganisms in the milk. The problem with the pasteurization process, of course, is that it's also destroying the milk. So
when you say destroy the milk, it's destroying. Now, when you destroy, there are good, there are helpful, and there are harmful bacteria, both.
Yes, there are. And lactobacteria and, you know, some of the other things that you can get in probiotic products are naturally there in milk, and those are actually good for you, and good for your intestinal lining, and good for your gut. And
you don't get that with pasteurized milk then anymore.
Well, you don't get
you lost the good stuff along with the bad stuff.
You have, and you also, with the pasteurization process, start to break down the milk as well. And so if you could avoid both the pasteurization process and in particular the homogenization process, you would have a better product, as most things. I mean, if we can eat the raw fruits and vegetables, they're a lot better for us than cooked or processed foods.
Well, let me ask you, and this goes straight to science. Now, this is because, I'm sure you'll know this inside and out. It seems to me that when anything is consumed, it's in effect oxidized. I mean, if you burn things in a fire, that's an oxygen process that breaks it down into its separate elements somehow. If you cook milk, if you heat milk during the pasteurization process, you're in essence digesting it, aren't you? In a sense, you're using up or breaking up the important components of it into basic elements. Isn't that what happens during the process of oxidation? Is that the same, or am I confused?
Well, I mean, yes, it's kind of the same process. I mean, you've got two things going on with a natural product like milk. There's obviously proteins in milk, and that's one of the reasons why we drink milk, is because, well, you know, we need our protein, and as well as calcium and other things and minerals and other things as well. But when you heat it, so you denature the proteins, you start to destroy the proteins, partly due to oxidation, but partly just from the heating process. And so you wind up with other products that, you didn't originally have in your milk, just degradation products from the process.
Well, this article we're referring to is over at Mercola.com, and later when we post our conversation with Don, we'll put a link to this article there. But it's talking about farmers, a group of farmers in Wisconsin, particularly in Minnesota, who are being hauled into court for selling raw milk. Don, why is raw milk illegal, or is it?
Well, selling raw milk is not illegal. It's interesting because the process by which, not the process, but the way this particular farmer was, and many others in the area were selling milk, is that you join the club, basically the membership. Your membership, bought a cow, and the farmer said, "Well, I'll keep your cow, and in return, I'll keep, and for this fee, I'll keep your cow, and then you can come and get your milk at any time you want it."
Mm-hmm.
And that was a perfectly legal process, but then the state and the health department said, well, you can't do that. You're breaking the law. You're actually don't have a seller's permit to sell foods. And so we're going to charge you with that.
So it's a licensing issue?
Well, it's disguised as a licensing issue, but it's kind of complicated because you are averting the normal distribution for the sale of food products. Instead of going through a grocery store, you're now going directly to the source, which is the farmer.
You're bypassing the corporate middleman.
Yes, and that is the problem.
Ah.
Now, Dr. Mercola said, you know, he places it's straight at the big producers, big food producers, and they have convinced their government lackeys to pass laws and to, you know, to require farmers to get licenses to sell and all the rest of that stuff. The same thing has gone on. It's gone on in Minnesota in a number of cases. It was a Freeport farmer in that's a little town near St. Cloud in the middle of the state, was acquitted on charges last fall of selling milk in Hennepin County, which is down near the big Twin Cities area. And then he was also asking for those same charges to be dropped against him in Stearns County, his local area. I've lost track of where that case is now, but the Hennepin County jury in October of last year found the farmer not guilty of selling raw milk, operating without a food handler's license, and handling adulterated food. Now, those are the charges that he was acquitted of. So one of the charges, without a food handler's license. And so the government is requiring individual food producers to get a food handler's license in order to sell their product.
Well, I can kind of see that, but I guess the reason for doing that is what's in question here. Is it they're doing it because it's at the behest of the corporate distribution network, who doesn't want consumers going directly to the source? Or is it a concern for health? Or it's people who have fooled themselves into thinking that it's a concern for health. Raw milk is not good for you. We have to stamp this out, so we won't license raw milk production or producers.
Well, in the latter that you mentioned, is raw milk not, you know, healthy for you, or could you possibly get sick from it? The evidence has shown that raw milk is not only much more beneficial to your health, but the farmers that are actually producing raw milk typically are a lot. So they're small farmers. They're not these big conglomerate, you know, cow
corporate farms,
machines, dairies. So they have a much cleaner environment than the milk mills that, you know, we've got in major production.
You're saying the small farmers' facilities are actually cleaner than the big ones?
Yes. There is much less problems with health issues from raw milk that's produced that way than from, you know, pasteurized, homogenized milk that is produced, you know, for your grocery store shelves.
So what I'm hearing from you then is that the big milk distributors, the big dairies who have thousands or hundreds of thousands, I don't know how many of cows out there, are not as concerned with their cows as a small farmer would be. And therefore, the milk they get has a higher risk of being contaminated dangerously, so it must be pasteurized.
Yes, that's right.
Mm.
And part of the reason is just, you know, the number, the large dairies are highly mechanized.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll have, I don't know, what, you know, maybe hundreds of cows lined up with the milk machines, and that's being, you know, pumped into, you know, big vats and everything, and they don't sterilize those milk lines.
I'll bet they don't name the cows either.
And they probably don't name the cows, and they probably, you know, feed the cows you know, bacteria, I mean not bacteria, antibacterial food in order, so because they're in tight quarters. You know, a small former can raise a cow the way it's meant to be raised. That is, out in the pasture with a bunch of other cows, and you know, eating grasses and stuff, natural foods, as opposed to what you wind up doing if you've got hundreds and hundreds of cows that you're trying to manage. So the big dairy is highly mechanized in order to, you know, produce a, in quote, cheaper product, because they're not necessarily concerned with the quality of the product as they are with the volume of the product. And so to get the volume out there, they need to have multiple cows. it's just a, you know, matter of scale. And if they had, I suppose, if they had the same labor to cow ratio as the small farmer did, they would be doing a much better job as well. But just the way things are when you start mechanizing and start gearing up.
Well, you say just the way things are, but this the same rule seems to apply across the board to other industries too. The bigger and more complex you get, the harder an enterprise is to control, and quality seems to go downhill. Because now people are concerned with cash flow more than quantity, when they should be concerned with quantity in order to produce cash flow. So it's like they try to get around the quantity issue with marketing, with advertising, you know, with packaging, and all those other things at the cost of quantity. Is that an accurate observation?
Well, I think that happens certainly in the food industry. Mm-hmm. In some industries, mechanization, you know, is fine. And I'm thinking about the computer industry, for example. You know, having a robot stick a integrated circuit into a circuit board and then soldering it, actually the robot can do a much better job than a human can. And you take out, you know, you can do all of that in a clean room environment. The initial setup cost is tremendous because of the mechanization, but the end result, you've got a much more reliable product with less people and more robots doing the job.
Well, I'm trying to distill this down to some sort of a basic principle here. So if living things are involved, people are involved, animals are involved, plants, food supply is organic, you know, it's not mechanical.
Right,
mechanical
exactly.
Systems are being applied, somehow maybe applying a mechanical system to an organic purpose is not the best idea. Glittering generality, or is there a nugget of wisdom there?
Well, no, I think that's you've hit the kind of nail on the head here, because it's whether you're mechanizing to a, you know, a high degree so you can farm more acres with less people, or in the process you're using you know, chemicals to knock down weeds and to control insects, and you're using genetically modified like corn or wheat or soy, for example, in order, you know, to manage things, to be able to manage things better. A small farmer, especially the ones that are now going organic and sustainable farming, using sustainable farming techniques, is producing a much healthier product. I mean, we've spoken, you know, in the past about how genetically modified foods have much lower food quality, whether it be the minerals in the food or the protein in the food. It's much, much lower from a genetically modified, you know, product than it is from the naturally occurring, you know, product. So,
but now you said moments ago that there's scientific evidence that indicates or proves that raw milk is healthier than pasteurized milk. If science is together on this, we believe science on so many other things. Why isn't this catching on in mainstream? Well, I want to say medical, but nutritional circles.
Yeah, well, if
seems like there would be a huge push on to get raw milk back on the tables of people. Then
one would think, but I think, you know, it's a political. It has become a political issue. And the, I mean, you can find raw milk. We don't have it here in, you know, in Tyler, but in Whole Foods stores, for example, raw milk is available. Mm-hmm. Or milk that's only been pasteurized and not homogenized, then you can have your choice. Mm-hmm. But the way that they're getting those products is from small farmers. It's not from the large, you know, mechanized farms.
You know, this herd share concept makes a great deal of sense to me if you know that the farmer is running a good operation and takes care of his animals. And the process of getting the milk and storing it is supervised and it's clean, and we should have access to. There must be dairy cows all over the place. I mean, their concentrations. I know California was a huge breeding ground for dairy cattle, and there were huge dairies out there. They kind of stole the limelight from the Midwest here. Well, you think of Wisconsin and Minnesota as being dairy states. Well, California is the biggest dairy state, has been for a long time now. But if this movement were to be publicized and encouraged, and the idea being to get raw milk back on the dinner table for people back in, you know, in their icebox, this seems an eminently sensible way to get not only milk but organic vegetables. This herd share, this is the first I've heard of herd share. I'm impressed with this, where you actually own kind of stock, a share of a dairy herd.
Right.
Or even in a farm. You know, it could be a farm. I mean, a farm can produce a large variety of products for a fair number of people, and properly managed seems like an answer, a viable alternative to what's going on.
Well, it certainly is, you know, an answer. Unfortunately, the states that originally allowed it, they're passing legislation to eliminate that possibility.
If enough people demand it, though, then they can affect the political process.
Yeah, and
how's that working out for you, Jim?
Well, I'll tell you what.
Is that working out pretty well for you?
Well, I'm just starting this. As a matter of fact, this week I got the name of a local farmer who does herd share.
Were you the one that asked for more taxes in Minnesota?
No, it wasn't me.
Well, it must have been another guy.
That was the guy down the street that works for ConAg. Yeah,
I see. One of the things that I was kind of curious about, Don, is what is the ratio to big corporate farms and milk producers to the number of smaller farms? I would think that the biggest element that big corporate farms have is that they can go to Cub or Super Value or a Safeway or any of the big grocery chains and say, we'll supply you with a gazillion gallons of milk every week, where a small farmer can't do that.
Well, no, and it's easier to negotiate with, you know, one person than it is to negotiate with hundreds of people. Sure. So if you say, gee, I need 1,000 gallons of milk a week, and your local small dairy farmers can't produce that much. I mean, this is the way it used to be.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, it used to be that
There used to be milkmen.
Well, and they delivered the milk to your door, and the cream separated from the milk, and it was raw milk, and everything was fine. Mm-hmm. But we've gone to these conglomerate things in so many areas in agriculture. Most agriculture these days is done by these large corporate, farms, and it, as we said, it produces a lower quality product. So if people start demanding that they want a better product and start searching out these smaller farms, there's going to be more people actually, you know, go back to the small farms. But the small farms were being bought up by these larger conglomerate farms. And so, you know, we don't have the land available that we did when these were family farms were operating. I do want to mention, as Mercola does, in his article, that there is a farm-to-consumer legal defense fund. It's a nonprofit organization that people can go to and donate to to help protect small farmers and to help protect having high quality food as opposed to being forced into a mold that you know, these big conglomerates want you in because they want your money at all cost. And you know, we can have a healthier lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. I don't know. You know, in Europe, the small farmer is the farmer for the most part. I mean, yes, they have some larger farms, but people want quality. And they won't stand for, you know, having second best stuff. That's why genetically engineered foods are pretty much banned in most of Europe. You know, you can, if you eat some vegetables, just in a, I mean, one time I was on a trip and just going through Charles de Gaulle Airport in France, in Paris, and it was the meal that I got at the airport was absolutely superb. I mean, the vegetables had so much flavor to them, and the quality of the meat was a lot better. And you know, as Americans, we've forgotten what the taste of healthy food is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think that might be the case. Yeah, that's probably true. The back, and this is something that you talked about earlier, but about how milk is digested and stuff. Now, I've said for years that I'm lactose intolerant, and I just drink soy milk primarily, and I'm self-diagnosed. Nobody's coming, no doctor's done tests or anything. But I did that because milk that I bought in the grocery store gave me gas. And, you know, and I switched to soy milk, and that doesn't. Now, am I kidding myself? Because now I'm also taking a probiotic pill in addition to all my regular regimens. And you're saying that that's one of the things that's washed out of homogenized milk, probiotics.
Well, the bacteria is killed in the pasteurization process. Mm-hmm. So if you, it'd be interesting to see if you could tolerate, you know, after you know, giving it a little while, if you could tolerate raw milk, and chances are you probably can.
Yeah, I'm just on the internet here. Was curious as to when homogenizing began of milk, and it was another French inventor who came up with a machine to homogenize milk, 1899. And it says here, this is on rawmilkfacts.com, that in spite of the successful homogenizing machinery, consumers weren't easily convinced that homogenization was such a good idea. By some accounts, homogenized milk wasn't sold successfully until about 1919, when the people of Torrington, Connecticut, bought enough of it to get noticed. Many skeptics held out for years longer, though, prompting one Michigan dairy to pull out all the stops to convince milk drinkers of homogenized milk's easier digestibility. So it was sold on those grounds, apparently.
I'm going to be going to the grocery store later on today. I'm just wondering if I could go up to my my local manager and talk to him and ask him if I could get raw milk delivered to the store. I don't know if his corporation allows for that.
It'd be interesting to hear the answer.
Some of the smaller grocery stores, sometimes when you check out, they ask you, did you find everything?
Yeah.
And sometimes they take note and say, well, you know, I didn't find this or I didn't find that. And they say, okay, well, they write it down, and then the next time you go in the store, they have it. So if, you know, if enough people go in and say, gee, I want this product, they'll find ways of getting it.
Sure.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I was kind of asking around ever since Heike brought up the raw milk idea again a few weeks ago. But she warned us that don't spread the name around because it's kind of an underground thing. Farmers are afraid of being hauled into court for selling and being shut down. So, you know,
right. And for things, you know, things like what we were talking about, you know, this morning. Yeah. The farmers want to provide the product, but our government's so messed up and so highly regulated these days, and which is part of the point of the whole article as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have the freedom to choose you know, which products we can consume or not. And apparently the answer to that, you know, over and over again is no.
Well, there's a video and information for you over at Mercola. That's M-E-R-C-O-L-A, Mercola.com. You can just do a search for raw milk because they've got a whole lot of information about genetically engineered food and videos and news stories on this whole area of thought and controversy. I'm persuaded. I'm going to go see what I can do to contact this farmer and not only look for raw milk but for organic vegetables from him. Because apparently he's willing, and I hope his business is thriving, and I'd like to help that along. I'd like to encourage that kind of approach. I think it's a healthy one. Don, as always, we're grateful for your thoughts, for your input on Monday mornings. Don normally joins us during our 8 o'clock hour Central Time Monday mornings from Garden Valley, Texas. How do the grapes grow this week?
Oh, they're growing too much. We're getting more rain. So between the heat and the sun and the rain... the vines. I mean, we can't keep up with the vines.
So that means probably less, more green stuff and less fruit, huh?
Well, the fruit is already set for the most part.
Okay.
So whatever fruit is there mm-hmm. is hopefully going to come in. But it means, you know, more potential for more disease, the fungus in particular, different types of funguses, mm-hmm. Black rot and phimopsis and anthracnosis, as well as powdery and downy mildews.
You're surrounded by enemies down there, aren't you?
It's difficult.
Those little critters floating around in the air attacking your grapes. My goodness.
Well, and this is why most vineyards are in arid areas.
Yeah. Right.
So it's much more difficult for us to grow grapes here in a little bit wetter climate. But we've had more rain this year than we've had in a long time. Mm-hmm. And the vines are just, it's hard keeping up because you'll get finished with the field. And by the time you get finished with the field, it's time to start the field over again with the training. Until we get these vines whipped into shape. We've got a lot of work to have.
I just had this picture of Dr. Don out there in his vineyard with a whip and a chair, encouraging his grapes to grow properly. Yeah.
Stop growing.
Don is a board member of creationmoments.com. There's a website. You ought to know about it, creationmoments.com. It's quite an organization, a wonderful ministry. It's been around for 50 years now, Don. I can't believe it's been that long.
Yes, this is the 50th anniversary, and we're going to have a celebration in September. I'm trying to let me gift you the date.
Yeah, where's really that going to be, too?
Well, it'll be in
American Legion in Foston. I knew it. Oh, no. Okay.
Okay. Let's see. It'll be Saturday, September the 7th, mm-hmm. is our anniversary date.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And I'll get the details as to exactly where it is, but it's going to be in Minneapolis.
Okay.
Creation Moments is actually in Foley, but to make it easy on people, mm-hmm. we will probably have it at a hotel in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
So people can come. We have a special speaker. And so it'll be kind of a reception type of environment with a presentation and... So it should be fun.
Yeah, I think should be a special time. Dr. Don Clark, biochemist, member of the board at creationmoments.com. As always, thank you so much for being here. We'll talk to you next week, okay?
All right, very good.
See you, Don.
See you.
Music continues on a Broken Road Radio Memorial Day Monday from Sherry Youngward.